This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Like the doctors, like the nurses, like the folks working in hospitals, because our election officials are interacting with the public to make sure that this essential service of democracy is working, they're frontline workers too. And people have really stepped up to help them out.
The clock is ticking down on Decision 2020. Whether they're talking about record turnout or voter suppression or the reliability of polling data, the pundits are in agreement on one thing. 2020 is an election like no other. This week on Sea Change Radio, we're speaking with political consultant Aaron Huertas about how this unique election is unfolding. We learn about how and when Americans are exercising their franchise, the growth in early voting around the country, hotspots for voter suppression, and what all of us can do to make a difference before the last ballot is cast. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Aaron Huertas. He is a political consultant, and he's currently working on the Healthy Voting Project, and he's also a podcaster. His podcast is Close Read. Aaron, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks so much for having me. There's been a pandemic since the last time we talked.
Indeed. Things have changed quite a bit. So first, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Healthy Voting Initiative? It's pretty cool.
Yeah, we started this in response to COVID-19. So public health organizations, American Public Health Association, National Association of City and County Health Officials, this is their first time really getting involved in elections. So me and other people who have worked in civic engagement and on voting issues, we've been helping them work with people who are used to working with polling locations, designing ballots, things like that. And we've developed this resource, healthyvoting.org, to guide people through their voting options, and specifically for folks who have concerns about their health and their community's health when they go out and vote. So the voting processes are a little different in every state, but the bottom line in discussing this with public health officials and with election administrators is that the most helpful thing you can do is vote early. And that includes voting by mail, that includes voting early in person in states that have those options. And then, you know, voting on election day too. And when you're doing this, it's important to remember, you know, you're just following the same instructions that you're following when you go to the grocery store. So whether you're dropping your ballot off or going to a voting center to cast your ballot in person, mask up, keep your distance, wash your hands, all that good stuff. So I think during the primaries, there was a lot of rapid change. People tried to adapt as fast as they could. We have had several months now where we've all been adapting to living with the pandemic and avoiding COVID when we go out. So we just got to do a lot of those same things we do anyway, but in the context of voting. And the important thing about voting early is that we can get our vote taken care of, done, banked. And then that way we can reduce crowding on election day for the people who are going to be voting later on election day. So it's kind of like bending the curve for the hospitals, like we talked about earlier in the pandemic, but we're helping bend the curve for the election administrators who are dealing with record turnout this year. And that's going to help people who are voting in person now and through election day, through this, what we now have is an extended voting season or election season that's taking place over more than the course of a month now.
So Weekend Vote and Healthy Voting, these are nonpartisan organizations that are determined to get as many people to exercise their franchise as possible. It's become a partisan activity in some ways to get the vote out versus suppress the vote. In some states, we've seen some very interesting, shall we say, and suspicious activities to try to keep people from voting. Early voting has been evolving because of that for several years now. How much has the pandemic accelerated battleground states or certain states in terms of their early voting window? Can you maybe point to a couple examples for us?
Yeah, so a lot of states, there's early focus on expanding how they do vote by mail, right? So a lot of states for this year, they dropped a requirement that you might need to have, say, a witness witness your mail ballot. Or some states, you maybe needed an excuse to get your absentee ballot, and now you don't need that excuse anymore. So that was a big set of changes. Other states have expanded some of their early voting options. Other states and counties, they're changing their polling locations. So they'll switch to much larger polling locations that can service people from a larger area. And part of that is like a ventilation circulation issue, right? You don't want people crowding in a church basement. So you're seeing repurposing of public spaces like stadiums and civic centers for voting. So we've seen that in a lot of locations. And in response, you know, people are really stepping up with early voting. It's really remarkable. Civic engagement folks have been into the idea of early voting for years because it gives people a longer time period to make their decisions, lets them vote in a way that's more convenient for them, especially if you're a shift worker or it's harder for you to take off work on a Tuesday on an election day. It just gives you more flexibility and more options as a voter. So right now we're up to about 29 million people who have voted early by mail or in person. And for perspective, that's about 21% of total turnout in the 2016 general election. So we're seeing a big shift of regular voters who maybe had normally voted on election day, now opting to vote earlier. And we're also seeing some new voters, some infrequent voters who maybe only vote in presidential election years. They're opting for these early voting options too.
So I wasn't sure about that. When I've been watching a lot of these numbers coming in every day, it was 15 million people have voted early, and now it's 29.5 million people have voted early, I read today. That does include mail-in ballots then.
Yeah. It's important to understand that, you know, voting early is inclusive of mail voting in a lot of these statistics. So if somebody's requested and returned a ballot, that's public information. And those ballot returns, that's part of those numbers too. There have been 82.4 million mail ballots requested. So they're also looking at the mail ballot return rate, right? Or have people returned those mail ballots? And those numbers will go up over time too. We're at the point now where the U.S. Postal Service is telling folks, if you request a mail ballot today by mail, today is the last day to reliably do that, to guarantee delivery, because the post office is thinking about turnaround time. You request your mail ballot, it gets sent to you, and then you mail it back. So they're telling folks, you know, get that done now. We can't necessarily guarantee full turnaround time via mail, because everybody who's operating in this space, the last thing you want to happen is that somebody in earnest tries to vote, does the right thing, and then for whatever reason misses a deadline, forgets to sign an affidavit on the back of their ballot, and you don't want them to have a frustrating experience with these systems, especially at a time when we're changing over a lot. So, you know, for groups that are talking to voters every day, a lot of the focus is on making sure folks hit all those steps. And mail voting involves a lot more steps than in-person voting. It involves a lot less social contact. So there's a good public health reason to go ahead and vote by mail. And if you're going to vote by mail, you want to make sure to just follow all the instructions. And when you get a mail ballot in the mail and you open it up, there's like a very well-designed set of instructions that come with that ballot. And if you read through all the instructions, you're going to be in great shape. But people do sometimes miss things, like they will come with secrecy envelopes for your ballot, an inner envelope. So you got to get your mail ballot in that inner envelope to make sure it counts. And there'll usually be an affidavit on the back, just affirming that, you know, this is me, I signed this ballot. And you want to sign that, and states will match your signature on your affidavit with the signature that you gave them when you registered to vote, just as part of the verification process for making sure your ballot counts. So, you know, the short and simple version of this is to sign, seal, and deliver your ballot as soon as possible. And if you do it as soon as possible, if you return it as early as possible, in a lot of states, that's also going to give you the opportunity to check that state website or call up your local clerk and make sure that they have received your ballot and that your ballot is going to count. So again, you like big check, okay, you voted. And then if there's any problem, if you forgot to do something, if it didn't get processed right, if God forbid it didn't get delivered on time, you have the opportunity to then go to an early voting location or go to a polling location, talk to somebody in person, and you can go and correct that and make sure your vote does count.
Old time, she's a fickle one, can't turn back her hand. How these lives are forgotten, just don't understand. Please don't sit back and watch our children on trial. You're not alone on this dangerous line.
If you enjoy the music you hear on Sea Change Radio, please consider checking out Fog Swamp, a musical group led by Sea Change host Alex Wise. Go to fogswamp.com to stream or download Fog Swamp's most recent studio release, Drop Days. That's fogswamp.com.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Aaron Huertas. He's a political consultant, and his latest project is healthyvoting.org. So, Aaron, in the 2004 election, there was a lot of controversy in the aftermath of John Kerry losing to George W. Bush, particularly in Ohio, when it comes to electronic voting machines. That has not been at the top of a lot of people's radar in terms of voting issues and voter suppression, voting discrepancies. Where are we in terms of electronic voting machines as a country? Is it a state-by-state basis? Is there a Diebold systems of 2020 for us to focus on?
No, I mean, people have been concerned about any changes to the election process. And you know, the thing that changed after the 2000 election was a lot of counties and a lot of states, they switched their voting equipment and they went from manual equipment to electronic equipment. And there was an effort that's been largely successful, which is to get the electronic machines to also produce a paper record. So you have some redundancy there. So it's not just all, you know, bits and electrons, but that you're getting a paper copy. So like my local voting in DC, if I vote on a machine, I can see the print version of my vote and I can go verify that the print version matches the electronic version. So if there ever was a discrepancy, there would be redundancy in the record keeping so we could keep track of it. For this year, there's been less concern about that because we've all been using the electronic machines for several election cycles now. And the thing that's new now is this big shift to mail voting and to early voting. So, you know, there are states like California has had more experience with mail voting. And then, you know, Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, they've had a ton of experience with mail voting. And for a lot of the other states that don't have that depth of experience, they've been extending mail voting to more people. They've been operationalizing more voting, taking in more absentee ballot requests. Some states have decided to proactively send people ballots via the mail. And during the primaries, you know, states logistically had to figure a lot of this stuff out, and election administrators had to figure a lot of this stuff out and answer a lot of these questions. So it's going to be smoother for the general election, but it's going to be at a much bigger scale. So little stuff is going to come up. There's always going to be, you know, little errors along the way for any operation that is this big. But the nice thing about voting is that there's always redundancy baked into the system because there's so many records associated with your registration, with your ballot requests, with whether or not you got a ballot, with who shows up in person to vote early or vote on election day. So the local clerks, you know, have all that information. Your local clerks, the folks who are ultimately charged with administering everything related to an election locally where you live, either at your township level or your county level. So that they're the ones who are really on the front line operationalizing all this.
So healthyvoting.org has limited resources. You can't be in all 50 states at the same level. Where are you focusing your efforts in terms of states? And maybe give us a snapshot of some of the issues at hand in states that you're focusing on.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of the traffic that we get to healthyvoting.org is via Bing, and Microsoft is one of our partners. And the companies that do search engines, one of the things that they do behind the scenes, which, you know, people are now seeing the results of that were closer to election day, if you go to Google, if you go to Bing, if you go to any other search engine, and if you go to your social media sites, you know, whatever it is, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, they will have special voting information cards that they will put in front of you, right? So if you're searching for anything related to voting, if there's voting related content that's coming up, you'll get something that looks different from the rest of the website. It's like the most special time of year for civic engagement and election nerds like me. And you get all these pieces of information about how to go vote this year. So if you search for healthy voting and you're on a Microsoft device or you're connected into the Bing search engine universe at all, you'll get information from healthyvoting.org for your location, right? So because your IP address is tied to a geographic location when you're online. So one thing that I've noticed is that Texas is where we're getting a lot of our traffic. And Texas obviously has a lot of people in it. It's one of our most populous states. But I think one of the other reasons that people are searching out this information is that Texas is one of the states that has limited mail voting, and people are early voting in really big numbers in Texas. So more than 4 million people have already voted early in Texas.
And when you say early, you mean in-person early voting, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And the mail voting is limited. The Dropbox locations are limited. So they wound up with a much more limited version of mail voting than other states opted for this year. So more folks are voting early in person, and they're checking out the Texas page, and then they're also checking out the advice from public health experts on voting in person, right? And so the basic stuff we already covered: wear a mask, keep your distance, wash your hands. And I've also noticed that when states have some sort of conflict over what their laws are going to be, whether that's a new debate in the legislature and that's in the news, or whether there's a court case that one or the other parties are bringing that results in some change in the local election law, people will also start searching to learn, okay, well, how should I be voting? I'm concerned about those conflicts. I think everybody who works on elections, we get concerned if the rules are changing or have any, you know, threat of change as people are voting. And we're in the middle of election season right now, right? More than 29 million people have already voted, which is pretty remarkable. But one of the things that happens is when those changes are happening and when elected officials are debating what those changes could be, that actually drives more interest in elections too. So we see there's, you know, millions of people out there who are being really vigilant this year about how their voting laws are changing, so they know what their options are, so they can go do the responsible thing and make sure that their votes get cast, get counted, and get banked.
So, Aaron, you were talking about how voter suppression activities and media coverage of controversies regarding access to the ballot may have backfired on the voter suppressors. It seems like we're getting some pretty impressive early turnout.
Yeah, there's some evidence from political science that when there's conflict over voting rules or when it becomes harder to vote, that people counter-mobilize in response to that and wind up voting at largely the same rates. Of course, that's not a pleasant experience for voters, right? Nobody wants to be in a line for a long time. Nobody likes to have to jump through extra hoops to make sure their vote counts. But at the end of the day, anytime we're talking about voting, and especially when there's changes to voting laws, and we're seeing that all happen in real time in a lot of our communities right now, people do respond with that extra level of vigilance. And, you know, even a lot of folks who are doing voter contact work right now, it's like customer service for democracy, right? And this is happening with the United Way has done a partnership with Rhode Island and other election officials to help guide people through the voting process. Campaigns are experiencing this. The nonprofit groups that do voter mobilization are experiencing this. But people have questions and they need answers, right? So it's everything from helping somebody make sure their registration is up to date on a website to verifying that their mail ballot request is in and that their mail ballot is on the way to making sure that they filled out their mail ballot and returned it at a Dropbox or an election office or via mail. And little things, right? Letting people know when their early voting hours are. One of the really fascinating things about talking to the election administrators is it really is customer service for them. These are offices that are often dealing with other things like, you know, deeds and property taxes and, you know, birth and death records and you name it. So they're very community service oriented departments anyway. And then on top of that, they have this huge event every year. Elections are the biggest public events in the United States. And this year in particular is really daunting. But, you know, thankfully, a lot of community groups and civic engagement groups and businesses, they've all stepped up to try to help these election officials. And I think they've started to understand that, like the doctors, like the nurses, like the folks working in hospitals, because our election officials are interacting with the public to make sure that this essential service of democracy is working, they're frontline workers too. And people have really stepped up to help them out. His voice just like a blade. And while he wanders aimlessly, the question never fades. Where is the lock? Where is the key? Where is the moment you come back to me? When is the time? When it will be? When is the moment you come back to me? When it comes, when it comes, it'll be.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Aaron Huertas. He is a political consultant and works for healthyvoting.org, and he's also a podcaster. People can check out Close Read. Speaking to the enthusiasm, this is encouraging to see. I don't know if we're going to be matching the turnout rates that we usually get, which are still comparatively low when you consider, I think we get 58 to 61% turnout for a presidential election, as opposed to some countries where they get 90% or 100% turnout. But when people are told that they can't vote, or that there's long lines and that they're being dissuaded from voting, particularly when they're being targeted based on the color of their skin or their socioeconomic status, it can be a real driver. And then also you have a very divisive president in Donald Trump, which is kind of, I think, showing that there's a lot of enthusiasm to vote either way. So if you can put on your pundit hat for a minute, it seems that the Republican strategy, Trump's message is get out there on election day and vote. Don't trust the early voting process. And the Democratic message has been get out there and vote as soon as you can, because you just don't know if they're going to be processing it. Do you think this strategy by the Republicans is well thought out, especially when we consider the way the polls have been looking? I mean, if your candidate is looking like they're done, 10 points behind in the polls on election day, are you really going to be motivated to spend 2 or 3 hours waiting in line to vote for that candidate?
So if we go back in time pre-pandemic and we look at the social science literature on mail voting and early voting, the scientists have done experiments, right, to see how does a county that has adopted this early, how do voters there behave versus a county where it doesn't get adopted early, right? And they'll look at the election returns and who decides to vote early, who decides to vote by mail. And traditionally, there's been no partisan advantage. It usually, this stuff just increases turnout in equal measure for Democrats and Republicans. And then, of course, with very little, you know, third-party voting or totally independent voting, depending on where you're at. So that is changing this year because now we're having partisan conflict over people's voting methods. And I think there's been a lot of back and forth on this, right? So like right after the pandemic, a lot of Democrats were saying, well, we should all just vote by mail. And then a lot of election administrators were saying, you can't just switch to vote by mail. We can't, like, you can't turn a state into Oregon or Washington State or these states that have done a lot of mail voting with the flip of a switch, right? It's really going to be a mix of things. Then we saw political conflict over the Postal Service. So then you saw a lot of Democrats, a lot of liberals saying, well, now I'm concerned about mail voting. I'm going to go shift to early voting in person. And that was also at a time where people had become more comfortable, like a lot of the lockdowns had lifted. And people had more exposure to, okay, I've been to the grocery store several times. Okay, some stuff in my community is opening back up. Not me, but maybe some people are going indoor dining as opposed to outdoor dining. So people's orientation to being around other people in a physically distant way changed too. And then on the Republican side of things, there's a difference between what Trump is saying and the messages people are getting locally or from people at the state level who are Republicans too. And this gets back to something I was saying earlier, where the election officials, right, they're operating in a largely nonpartisan manner. Even if they ran for office as a Democrat, as a Republican, they have to fulfill the law on behalf of all voters. And it's like customer service. It's rare that you wind up with an election official, even someone who's elected on a statewide basis, who tries to put their thumb on the scale. They're the exception to the rule more than the rule itself. So the interesting thing from a campaign perspective too is for the campaigns that are mobilizing voters right now, they're also asking people to vote by mail, right? And they're also asking people to go vote early. There's even some Republican mailers that have said, hey, the president has voted by mail. Can you vote by mail too?
Even while the president is dissing mail-in voting and apparently sabotaging the post office, and or at least seeding doubt within the populace about how much you can count on your mail-in ballot I mean, that's been a repeated talking point of his. He keeps talking about, well, they lose them, or there's the 50 ballots they find in the river. He's all over the place when it comes to mail-in voting. But you're saying that from the GOP side of things, besides Trump, that they are urging their base to do mail-in voting.
It depends locally, right? And a lot of what I'm looking at is like, what are the ads that the parties are putting out on Facebook? What are the mail that they're sending to people, and how are they conveying voting messages to them? And, you know, the election administrators pay attention to all that too, because they have to do this from a nonpartisan perspective and from a governmental perspective. One thing that a pollster told me that really stuck with me was people aren't worried about themselves having a bunch of different voting options. They're worried about other people who maybe they don't trust, or maybe on the other side of the aisle having too many voting options. And it's kind of a funny disconnect, right? And again, back to this customer service thing that I keep repeating, people like having options, right? Like we all want to know that there's a bunch of different ways we could vote. And if we want people in our community to be able to vote too. But then once something gets politicized or gets put in a partisan context, people are like, oh, but like those other people are going to vote in this other way that I don't trust. And, you know, unfortunately, like this is very new in American politics to have conflict about voting method at that level. And that's part of the reason it's so important for folks to go back to those local election officials. Because if you take things out of the national context, and if you take things out of the party partisan context, you've got your local county clerk who's your neighbor, and you've got poll workers who are from your community, who live in your county, who live in your township, who are actually administering the elections. And, you know, that like these are the biggest public events that we put on. They're community events. So I think the partisan conflict is fascinating. And then our actual individual lived experience as voters winds up being totally different from that, because we're relying on people in our community. And this is true for a ton of issues, but once you get back into that local focus, then all that partisan stuff, it's still there, but it can really fade away, because now you're back focused on your community and how you're voting and how people in your community are helping you vote.
Aaron Huertas, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by George Benson and Fog Swamp. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.